Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's teleconference to adopt the final opinion for congestion revenue rights auction efficiency. Please note that all lines are muted until the Q&A portion of the call. If you have a question, please press #2 on your telephone keypad and we will address you as soon as possible. I would like to begin today's conference and turn the call over to Benjamin Hobbs, Chair of the Market Surveillance Committee. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Marvin. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. With me today are the two other members of the MSC, Jim Bushnell and Scott Harvey, as well as ISO staff, including Greg Cook, Brad Cooper, Perry Savidio, Danielle Tavell, Shami Davis, Lindsay Thomas, and Jim McClain. We're going to be considering the adoption of the draft opinion that we posted on congestion revenue rights auction efficiency. Although this is not a stakeholder process, we don't run stakeholder processes, we are very interested and appreciate comments and questions by stakeholders at our in-person meetings as well as our calls, and I'm very much looking forward to the interaction today. The meeting's agenda will be as follows. There will be first an opportunity for general comments by the folks who've called in on issues other than the opinion, and then after that we'll turn to the opinion itself. There will be a summary presented the opinion by Dr. Bushnell, comments from other MSC members, followed by a comment and question period with folks who've called in, and then the meeting will conclude with a vote and future business. So I'll begin first by asking if there are any comments that anybody would like to make on any matter other than the opinion and the congestion revenue rights auction. Operator, can you see if there's anybody queued up who would like to make a comment or a question at this time?
Sure. And again, you can press #2 at this time if you wish to add a comment or a question. And we don't seem to be receiving anyone in the queue at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. So at this point, I'm going to turn the mic over to Jim Bushnell, who will summarize the opinion.
Okay, thanks, Ben. I was hoping to try to do this quickly, but there's a lot here, so we'll see. Before I get into talking specifically about our thoughts on the CAISO proposal, I wanted to first talk a little bit about how we view the role of CRRs, kind of higher-level thoughts about CRRs that really color our thoughts on the specific proposal here. So there's a few points here. The first is that what we call in the opinion ISO-backed CRRs, these are, or you know, maybe more accurately called transmission ratepayer-backed CRRs. This is meant to refer to you know, payments from CRRs that are directly linked or coming from the party that is collecting the congestion revenue in the first place. And we view those types of CRRs as different. They're uniquely positioned to provide hedging or risk management benefits in a way that can reduce risk for both sides of the transaction, because the ISO or through it, the transmission ratepayers are collecting a fluctuating revenue stream and congestion revenues, and there are market participants who are paying the exact opposite revenue stream, and when those rights can be distributed in a way that goes from one group to the other, it can reduce risk for both. That's a beneficial, it's an outcome that the market would like to see, and one that was really the spirit of the idea behind CRRs. It is true that other parties could provide, at least to the customer side, a similar instrument that hedges congestion risk through a basis swap of some kind, but that party would have to take on risk in order to provide it, and the costs or the prices at which those types of instruments would be available are really hard to predict. At least in the U.S., there are such instruments being traded, but they're being traded in the context in which there are ISO-backed CRRs also present that can be put together to sort of offset or back up these types of secondary CRRs that could be offered. And so we're less sanguine as some that the financial sector could sort of step in and fill the gap of ISO-backed CRRs, at least at costs that are commiserate to what the ISO or transition ratepayers do. All right, so that's the first point. The second has to do with the goal of the CRR process. By process, I mean both the allocation as well as the auction process, the sequence of those. That the goal is primarily to facilitate the distribution of these ISO-backed CRRs to market participants who can and will then use them to make forward wholesale market transactions, which will improve the access and the competitiveness and efficiency of the wholesale market. So the goal is for these rights to find their way to wholesale market participants who are going to be using them to enhance market efficiency. You can call this, and in the opinion, we sort of reference a couple places where FERC basically interprets this to be a form of firm transmission service or access to firm transmission service. It's kind of a financial equivalent of the old physical firm transmission service of one kind or another. Now, you know, there's been in the comments and in the stakeholder process, there's been various discussions of other goals of the auction, like maximizing auction revenue from selling rights or price discovery, where the auction could be used to predict what future congestion revenues might look like. Those are fine outcomes, but they're not ones that we view to be the primary purpose of the auction allocation process. And we don't think that the auction design should be sort of driven by those types of goals. It should be driven by the goal of distributing the CRRs in a way that helps the market work. And then the third point is the point that transmission ratepayers do have a legitimate claim to the congestion revenues associated with the transmission facilities that they are paying the capital costs for. And so they're raising legitimate concerns in this process that the revenue, the congestion revenue, is being distributed in ways that is both, you know, could be construed as a bad deal for them, but also is being distributed in ways that is not furthering the goal we just articulated of trying to help rights find their way to the places that make the market operate more efficiently. So all that is to say that the task the CAISO is undertaking is to try to reduce this auction revenue shortfall, the congestion revenues that are not being compensated by sufficiently by the auction prices, to try to reduce that and reduce it, particularly the part that could be attributable to bidding that doesn't really have any or at least much purpose in supporting the efficiency of the wholesale market. So what they're trying to do is reduce the auction revenue shortfall associated with rights that aren't really supporting wholesale markets while preserving the rights that are helping those functions. And we support that objective. That's why we support this proposal. And we view this proposal as pushing in the direction of that objective, although there certainly is reason to think that, there's uncertainty about exactly what the effects are going to be that we'll get into. All right, so I'll talk briefly about the specifics of the proposal. There are two elements remaining in this round, this track one. The first has to do with information and notification of outages. Maybe we'll get a chance to explore this more, but a big part of the auction revenue shortfall problem can be attributed to constraints that are not modeled in the auction process for distributing CRRs, but do in fact bind when the day-ahead market is run. And so when a constraint is not in the auction model, it can't be priced. And if it is binding in the day-ahead market, it will generate revenues associated with anybody influences those constraints, CRRs that influence those constraints. Okay. So the most extreme version of this problem would be like CRRs that sell for zero price, but then subsequently earn revenues later on. If it sells for zero price, this means that it doesn't impact any lines that are binding or any constraints that are binding in the CRR auction process. Now, and probably some of those are not binding because they weren't represented in the model in the first place. We'll get into this. There is revenues associated with these zero price CRRs. There's a part in the opinion where it could be construed that we're referring to electrically equivalent CRRs, but in fact we were meaning to cite that there was revenue shortfall associated with zero price CRRs, which is not necessarily associated with electrically equivalent ones. All right, so the idea behind the early notification part of this proposal is to enhance the modeling of constraints in the auction by allowing information to flow to the ISO when putting together its auction in a timely manner. Right now, the deadline for reporting planned outages for the following covered period is after the actual auction is run, the annual auction is run for that period. And our understanding is some information still makes it in the auction. Not everybody's waiting for the date of the deadline. But the spirit of this is to create a second reporting date where transmission owners would be responsible for providing the CAISO the information relevant for the CRR auction in time for them to incorporate it into the annual auction model. And it's hard to argue with the spirit of trying to get better information into the model. Almost every stakeholder supports the idea of the model better reflecting the actual transmission system. So we certainly don't have any objection to this. We do note a couple words of caution surrounding the fact that the rule will only work to the extent it's complied with. The CAISO's reports have indicated some issues with compliance with the reporting dates and the monthly auction process. And I think we still need to make some progress as to exactly why that's happening and how to raise compliance with these sorts of deadlines. We don't think that a big penalty for noncompliance is necessarily the answer. It could create a bunch of other bad effects, but it would be helpful to better understand exactly why these reporting dates aren't met. Okay, so then the most controversial or probably consequential part of the proposal is the elimination of certain types of node pairs as eligible to be bid on in the auctions. In particular, the CAISO is proposing to eliminate what they call non-delivery pairs. These are CRRs associated with nodes that can't be linked to a real day-ahead market transaction that's plausible in the market. So things that would source at supply generation and hubs, things that sync at load aggregation configurations of various kinds and hubs, but not other types of pairs. In particular, the generation-to-generation pairs or generator-to-generator pairs would not be allowed to be bid on. The CAISO data indicates that this generator-to-generator pair is the biggest single source of the auction revenue shortfall. And you could think of this as then directing the scalpel at sort of the area that's creating the biggest concern in terms of the auction revenue shortfall, while also these types of nodes are less obviously of use, at least direct use, for hedging transactions. Now we're aware, and we certainly, you know, heard the comments by a bunch of market participants that they do use generator-to-generator CRRs and other types of non-delivery pair CRRs to support hedging in one form or another. And so we acknowledge that some of these are being used for hedging purposes. We think that there are quite a few that are not being used for hedging purposes. Many of them are selling for very low prices, which is an indication that they're not of a whole lot of value for hedging purposes. And so this is in the spirit of trying to direct the reductions at areas that are creating some of the biggest problems in terms of auction revenue shortfall, but hopefully creating the least harm in terms of reducing access to hedging. Certainly acknowledge that there's disagreement, or there's definitely disagreement about how useful these are for hedging. So there's a couple of caveats we threw in that we do acknowledge that this is likely to reduce auction revenue, that there will be, in the sense that there will likely be less CRR volume sold overall with the reduction of these non-delivery pairs, but that the idea is that these are being sold are also putting out a lot more in terms of congestion payment than the rights that would remain, and so the auction revenue shortfall would be reduced by both reducing just the quantity of CRRs that are being sold, but also hopefully this is targeting the CRRs that are selling at some of the biggest losses. That said, there are no guarantees that this will eliminate or maybe even substantially reduce the shortfall. It's possible that bidding strategies could adjust to find new ways to access unmodeled constraints, for example. But you know, if you look at just the summary stats that the CAISO has put together, and then they've done some reruns of auctions, it does indicate that this makes you know, substantial progress in reducing the auction revenue shortfall. So we support this move as in the spirit of targeting the rights that are creating the biggest shortfall, but hopefully you know, having less direct benefit for hedging that other types of CRRs can help fill the gap for. So going forward, and we in our conclusion we talk a little bit about some other things we'd like to see, ideas to discuss and studies that could be enhanced. So a couple thoughts that we threw in there was it would be nice to further explore ways to try to target CRRs that are selling for extremely low prices, which we view as a symptom of bids that are kind of clearing on unmodeled constraints that subsequently are active in the day-ahead market for sub-periods. And there have been various ideas kicked around at times, but not sort of run through a full auction analysis, and we'd like to see more exploration of that, things like a minimum sale price on a CRR or perhaps a bid or transaction fee for bidding on a CRR, something that would eliminate the sale of extremely low-priced CRRs that we'd like to better understand the proportion of the auction revenue shortfall that's attributable to CRRs that fall in that category. There are also, you know, we talk a little bit about the fact that the problem that brought us here today, the auction revenue shortfall, is at its root a transfer, what economists would call a transfer payment issue, that there are transmission ratepayers who are paying for the capital cost. They have a claim to the congestion revenue associated with that, and it's not the full value is not flowing to them now. But those are represent transfers from one group to another. They don't necessarily impact the efficiency of the market, whereas some of the changes we're talking about here could impact the efficiency. So if there are ways to try to address the concerns over the transfer payment through other types of mechanisms, uplifts, or whatever you want to call them, that would preserve the efficiency aspects of CRRs, that's another avenue that could be explored. A couple things in terms of numerical analyses we'd like to try to see include more exploration of the interaction of the LSE, the way the LSE markets are organized in California, and the way pricing at LAPS are organized here, and the interaction of that with the demand for hedging instruments in California. It could just be that there's not a huge demand for hedging from a large share of the LSEs. There's a minority share of the LSEs that have articulated they have a very large need for hedging and high value to it, but that could be influencing sort of the bidding process. Part of getting at some of those questions would be a more in-depth analysis of the allocation process itself, which in itself might be producing inequities. We got here to the point that there's a concern that people paying for the transmission lines aren't getting their full value out of the current CRR distribution process in terms of congestion revenue. Even if we got rid of the auction, there's still potential concerns that some folks might benefit disproportionately from the allocation process relative to other folks that are all equally paying they're equal transmission rate payers, but they might be getting different allocation process. And really, we kind of need to better understand that and understand how it interacts with the auction process. We'd like to see any proposals that come forward be modeled through essentially rerunning the auction process. The CAISO has done this for its node pair proposals for one quarter. We'd like to try to see that analysis for multiple proposals extended to multiple quarters, as many years and months as possible, to get a full picture as much as we can on the impacts of these different proposals. And then lastly, there are other aspects about how unmodeled constraints can affect not just the direct payouts associated with those constraints, but also the shift factors on other constraints that could be influencing payouts. So that should be something that we could look at while rerunning these auctions. Okay, so those are recommendations for things for track two. To come back and summarize this proposal again, we viewed essentially the choice at this point in time as falling into three broad areas. One would be to make only minor adjustments to the current annual auction, the information, for example. The second would be the DMM and SCE proposal to essentially turn the auction into one that where only the only ISO backed CRRs that would be made available would come from allocated parties who would voluntarily reoffer them in. We talk about this in some detail in the opinion. We're really concerned that this really restricts the types of CRRs that could form from the auction process. Essentially, there would either have to be risk-taking financial entities putting in certain types of CRRs, or a CRR being offered that's exactly the opposite of a CRR that came out of the allocation process to be cleared. And again, I think we need to better understand the allocation process and how it's working before we would commit to anything like that. Because among other things, it would lock in the structure of CRRs that came out of the allocation process to some extent. So between the do nothing and, or the minor adjustments, I should say, and the DMM proposal, we had significant concerns on both sides of that. And going back to where I started, where the spirit of this is trying to, you know, target as much as possible the revenue shortfall that can be attributed to CRRs that aren't really helping the wholesale market efficiency, but still preserving as much as possible the CRRs that are helping that. That's where we came down as sort of the direction we would like to see the CAISO go, and we view this proposal as in the spirit of that. So I will stop there.
Thank you, Jim. I'll see. Scott, do you want to add anything to what Jim has said?
He's covered just about everything, but let me just throw in a couple of additional comments to reinforce some of it. I think while the CAISO proposal may not be perfect and ideally focused, these restrictions on the sources go to some underlying issues involving the way outages are modeled and the way CRRs are valued, and I think we're seeing a set of bidding strategies that are taking advantage of generating revenues from differences in outage modeling, which don't really serve any efficient purpose in the CRR market and the auction valuation, and all the resources devoted to analyzing this really don't have any economic value. And there may be other ways with some effort that to address this without having to and allow more flexibility in bidding points, but this is a approximate way to see if we can address this problem, and maybe more fundamental changes will be needed to really correct it. I think, and I guess that's enough. That covers. Jim covered pretty much everything else.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Yeah, Jim, that was very thorough and organized. I'll just say that I'm, sympathetic with the general objective of not having, say, a half billion dollars over the next decade be in effect transferred from consumers to market participants. I would like to see the losses go down. I don't think they should be zero necessarily. General, I think it's important to try this. There is a sound general logic to limiting the pairs and to also perhaps exploring other options, as Jim mentioned, such as a minimum price or maybe slightly lowering the number of rights that are out there. I should also point out that we do have a revenue adequacy problem in terms of the relationship of congestion revenues to CRR payouts. And so some of these, this proposal and perhaps others that will come in the next track will also help with that, and that will be an additional benefit. At this point, I would like to turn it over to the folks who are listening to see if there are either comments or questions. And so, Marvin, can you give folks instructions as to how to queue up?
Sure. So you can use #2 on your telephone keypad if you do have a question or comment. And it looks like we already have someone in the queue, so I'll go to that line now. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Good afternoon, and thank you. This is Eric Little from Southern California Edison. Do appreciate the information. I've actually got about four different things, and I'll let you choose how you want to do this. I can either rifle through all four of them, or I can give you one and let other people comment and come back to me later, because I don't want to dominate the conversation. But let me go to the first one. You've stated that the revenues are due back to the transmission access charge payers, and I certainly agree with that. I do have one other piece, though, that I would like you to consider and let me know what your view on it is and whether or not it changes your opinion. It's not only the TAC, but also the fact that the pool of revenue that is created because load in aggregate pays more than what generators are receiving. That's just simply how congestion works within an LMP model. So the revenues that are sitting there to be refunded are revenues that were funded by consumers to begin with. And so the return of that back to those same consumers is in part the objective of the congestion revenue rights. And I do understand that there's others who are subject to congestion as a generator trying to transact between your point and selling at a trading hub. But there's other mechanisms for them to hedge those risks as well. So I am curious as to whether or not you considered anywhere in this process the fact that the pool of funds that is sitting there to be refunded is created because load paid more than generation to begin with.
Well, that
I don't
could
agree
also be
at all. I think it's the other way around. You could say that generators paid less than load paid. Generators got paid less than load paid. So if that was the criteria, we'd be arguing that the generators should get it all. I don't think it's the value comes from the transmission system that allows low cost generation to displace high cost generation in meeting load. And because we don't withhold use of the transmission system, we have congestion instead of, you know, value from physically withholding the transmission. And it goes to the it goes to the scarce resource, which is the transmission system, which has been built and paid for partly by internal loads, but also there are access charges collected from other users of the transmission system. All transmission customers have to pay.
Okay.
Eric, go ahead. You can go ahead with the other three points.
Was anybody else about Ben or Jim?
You could spin a price difference between a generator and a load as a generator earning less or load paying more. And I think Scott articulated it right, that there is a scarcity there in terms of our ability to deliver power from one place to the other, but. And the benefits are captured in the objective function of running the market. But I don't really agree with the notion that load is paying more and generators are indifferent. Let's put it that way.
So I, to me, since consumers pay most of the tax, to say that that in a sense this congestion revenue should be theirs because they paid more than generators, it's kind of that's kind of double counting, because we've already made that the argument, the tax argument, is essentially the same thing. It's, so it doesn't, at least to me, add additional weight to the argument that these are the ratepayers. These are the ratepayers' monies. That I think the TAC argument already effectively makes that. Eric, why don't you go ahead with the other three?
Yeah. Okay. So the second one that I wanted to know, and I do understand that some of this information may not have come out until after you guys had finalized your paper and your opinion. But the amount of the losses are growing. They're not getting less, and the paper seemed to indicate that they were going down. But in Q4 of last year and then in the first 2 months of this year, DMM has published information that suggests that the costs are actually growing, not becoming smaller. And I think your paper was based around the idea that they were becoming smaller. I wonder if that changes your opinion at all.
So on a time scale of years, if you go back to 2014, which was, if I remember right, that was a year of well over 100 million of losses. If you look at the time scale of years, they are less now than before. And the time scales of months or quarters, there are certainly fluctuations. But I don't think our position is premised or valid only if they are going down. In fact, we are supporting these changes because we think they should be brought down further. I think we'd all like to see it, see the yearly trend of it going down continue, but that wouldn't change our mind. You know, whether it went up in the last quarter or not wouldn't change our mind, I don't think, about whether we would support the proposal or not.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, we did not feel it was going down enough, which is why we think the CAISO needs to do something.
Yep, I agree
okay.
with that. And we all have to be careful as to how to interpret one, you know, quarter of data.
Okay. Appreciate that. I do think that there's a bit of a difference between the problems that were early on in the process and the problems later on in the process. My recollection is that early on there was a general over-allocation of CRRs and over-auction of CRRs that got derated globally, and the ISO can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but my recollection is that a lot of that early problem was simply allowing too many CRRs to begin with, as opposed to the more recent problems of the targeting of CRRs that the, as you described it, that the model in which the auction conducts is not the same as the model in which is used in the daily basis, creating this situation where people know that they can bid and not bind the constraint in the auction, but yet it will bind in the market operations. So, like I said, if I'm wrong on that, I'll be happy to be corrected, but just food for thought.
So, Eric, if I understand what you're saying, the recent uptick represents a change, is a result of not random fluctuations, more or less congestion in given quarters, but change or honing of strategies that more effectively address the vulnerabilities, and so you think that this actually might be signaling that we're going to be having worse problems in the future?
That is my concern, yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any comments on that hypothesis. If that's, you know, are we really seeing something like that?
I think maybe we should collect your other comments, and then, I just don't know how many other stakeholders are going to want to comment, but we can always
check
back.
Mark, how many other people do we have queued up?
So it looks like we have about two others at the moment.
So Eric, if the three and four aren't too long, you want to go ahead and do those, or if they're lengthier, that we could you can get back in the queue and follow the others.
I think they're fairly short. Why don't I toss them both out there, and then if you decide you want to go to others and come back to them, that's fine. The first one was that the paper spends a lot of time talking about how entities outside of the state cannot get CRRs. And I just want to point out that Section 36.9.4 of the ISO tariff deals with a term called OBAALSE, which is an out-of-balancing authority area load-serving entity that under certain sets of circumstances, not only can they get auction CRRs, but they can get an allocation of CRRs. And they can actually sync at their scheduling point. So the idea that you can't hedge a wheel or an export in the current market structure is not true. And I'm wondering if that came into your discussion at all because of the fact that, like I say, the paper seems to assume that it can't. The last point that I had on here was that there's a comparison saying, you know, there's some intrinsic value of having this liquidity that nobody seems to be able to quantify, but suggests that if it was, you know, 1% of energy revenues, that it would dwarf the amount of the losses that are going on here. Concerned about comparisons like that because, one, nobody's been able to show that it even approaches 1% of energy revenues. Two, the energy revenues, honestly, is as valid as any other number that you might choose, like GDP, quite frankly. The energy revenues, there's a lot going on behind the scenes of people hedging energy revenue risks and energy cost risks. And we don't know exactly what's happening and what's not, so we don't know how much people are actually exposed to that energy price within the ISO's market. So to draw that type of comparison, I think, is a little bit, in my opinion, misleading. And I'm hesitant to see any numbers come out there about the comparison of this without knowing what the value of that liquidity is. And I've not seen anybody yet who can define what that value is. So I'm kind of wondering if you guys have any thoughts on what it would take to do that valuation and how long it would take to do it, because in the meantime, these losses continue to accumulate.
So I'll definitely grant the point that since most of the $10 billion or so per year of costs are fuel costs, that anybody who's done production costing and planning knows that those are hard to move by very much. But I think there is another perspective, which is if you look at the total amount of congestion revenues and the losses relative to that. So in recent years, 30 to 50%, sometimes more, of the auction revenues, of the payouts only represent losses. But if you compare it to total congestion revenues that eventually go back to consumers, the percentage is a good deal smaller than that 50%. So I think it's useful to put things in perspective by having a variety of different yardsticks to compare it against, and auction revenues versus payouts are not the only ones, and I think tend to, to me, have overstated the importance of these. So perhaps congestion revenues altogether on the interties, the day internally, the day ahead of market, in real time might be a better thing to compare the losses against. But that's just an opinion. I think it's worthwhile to compare it against several.
Yeah, I mean that was thrown in there as a spirit of trying to, you know, think about what 75 million means in different contexts. I think another context is that the TAC itself, I think, is around $2.2 billion. Your point is well taken. It is extremely difficult to try to quantify this, but we do feel like access does help, especially over the long run, and that can turn into a tangible economic number. But we're really just trying to point out that the interaction of the transmission, this payment is to the transmission system itself and its role in the size of the whole market. On your earlier comment, I think we didn't mean to imply that outsiders don't have access to CRRs now. We raised concerns that under the DMM-SCE proposal, that access could be extremely restricted. But I can't claim to be an expert on the allocation process, so your point's well taken, and we'll take a look at what types of allocations are available to outsiders. I don't think it really changes the fundamental views in the opinion, but it is useful information for us.
Understood. I guess what it would change then is that the outside entities would be no more restricted than any other entity trying to buy ACRR, in that there would have to be a willing counterparty to do that transaction. But otherwise, anybody who is eligible for an allocation, whether it's an internal to the ISO or an external to the ISO entity, would still be able to get those. So it seems to come down to kind of the same argument as anybody inside the ISO or even financial parties who really have no physical interest in the grid whatsoever. That they would all be subject to the same thing. Notably, even load-serving entities within the ISO would be subject to the same thing. So to the extent that they were trying to buy an additional CRR under the SCE proposal, they would only be able to do so to the extent that there's a willing counterparty that wants to take on the counterflow to that. So at that point, everybody would be in the same game.
Yeah, everybody would have access to the grid denied. I understand your opposition to open access, but...
I'm sorry. I don't believe that I have an opposition to open access, and I don't appreciate it being characterized that way. A market is between willing counterparties, and the system as it sits right now, as we've discussed, is this is revenue that ought to be returned to those who are paying the transmission access charge. By holding some of this aside and auctioning it off, the ISO is acting as an agent on behalf of those load-serving entities and selling it at any price. You've even noted in your proposal that there are alternatives such as setting minimum prices to help take care of that. That's the fundamental issue that we're getting to here. I really am somewhat offended by being told that I do not support open access to the grid. Thank you.
Okay. Operator, do we have others that are queued up?
Yes. I'll go to the next line. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, my name is Justin Tanu. I'm with Calpine Energy Solutions, a non-utility load-serving entity operating in direct access in 17 states, including California. We participate in the CAISO markets, and we receive an allocation of annual and monthly CRRs from the CAISO, as well as participate in the auction. first, I want to say that there's, you know, we all talk about what our ideas of what the ratepayer wants or does not want. And normally, most entities have a huge disconnect between their consumer and the people that face the markets, whereas direct access companies, such as and even personally myself, we know what the consumer wants. I talk directly to the consumer. And they have contracts that trace market prices. And so we believe that we know and what the consumer wants, and these consumers are highly sophisticated. First, there's a wait list of captive ratepayers that are looking to get outside of the utility. It's just the legislative environment is not quite ripe to do that yet, or the regulatory regime. So we know that the consumers don't pay as much attention to revenue deficiencies as they do to hedging their basis risk from supply to delivery node. So, you know, having said all that, I do want to hit the proposal elements, and we support a couple of these proposals, but I'm just going to, so I don't take all the time here, just move to the first proposal element. We support that creating additional annual outage reporting deadline to be aligned with the annual congestion revenue rights allocation auction process to improve the CR model. Used in the annual process. That's something that we agree with. We also support the CR auction change that would limit eligible injections and withdrawals on electrically equivalent nodes. We believe that the CAISO does not yet have enough evidence on record to eliminate gen-to-gen pairs as opposed to adopting more targeted restrictions that would eliminate electrically equivalent transactions. I think while the CAISO single season auction simulation removing gen-to-gen pairs might suggest that increased awards on delivery pair CRs would have occurred to load aggregation points, a more complete record of evidence needs to be established before making any conclusion that gen-to-gen pairs does or does not support hedging activity, particularly as it relates to targeting paths that reduce price volatility between certain supply and delivery nodes. Having said that, we do agree that low-priced gen-to-gen nodes being used as lottery tickets should definitely be eliminated, but that scalpel that you've talked about earlier needs to be further refined instead of completely eliminating the gen-to-gen pairs in this proposal. One of the other things I want to bring up, and there's an argument by some stakeholders that a bilateral market replaced the CR auction process, and the reason behind this proposal is fundamentally flawed at every level. The CAISO asked the market participants in the December 19th workshop a very important question: why does a bilateral market not exist? I believe the answer is fairly simple, but there's a failure to recognize why bilateral markets do not exist in California to support hedging activity. Bilateral markets, along with CRR auction process or the FTR process, provide an important hedging instrument. If the auctions are intended for hedging purposes, the current CR design does not go far enough to facilitate hedging of contracts of varying tenors entered into frequently by and between suppliers and direct access load. The bilateral market and the CR auction process are not mutually exclusive. The bilateral market that does exist on the East Coast is conditioned upon a robust auction process allowing market participants and competitive load to update positions and bid prices continuously. frequent auctions of various tenors do not exist in the CAISO, and until they do, it will not help increase demand for hedging, promote significant bilateral activity, nor will we see the premium FTR pricing between hub and zone loads similar to those on the East Coast as discussed in Scott Harvey's paper. So the policies that the CAISO should implement, shouldn't be based on state regulatory environment, but on those principles an RTO was created for: open access and direct access, or in other words, market efficiency and competition. The MSC, in their opinion, observed a 1% efficiency gain in overall multi-billion-dollar market would dwarf alleged losses due to revenue deficiency. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Any response from MSC members?
I'll just say that we do discuss a little bit in the opinion about ways to try to identify certain gen-to-gen transactions that could be maybe tied to pre-existing CRRs or other types of things as one possible route to try to bring back some of that.
Thank you.
There will be opportunities in the future as the performance of these reforms are observed to perhaps sharpen the scalpel, as you put it. Right now, it's somewhat blunt, and perhaps there'll be benefits to making it more refined later. And so, this won't be the last opportunity to do that. Okay, thanks, Justin. So, operator, do we have anybody else queued up?
Yes, we have a couple more here. I'll go to the next line. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Ellen Wolf from Rosero Consulting. Thanks for the opportunity to ask some questions. Ben, you gave me a good entree, because one of the main questions I have is, as you know, the ISO is pursuing, I think, more or less as we speak, a track zero to see what changes they can implement in the very short run with respect to improved modeling of different outages and constraints and other changes that they can make on their side to help reduce some of the problem, reduce the revenue adequacy, and hopefully reduce some of these net auction payments. And a question I have for you, gentlemen, is, you know, you mentioned a couple times in your paper going ahead with these changes because they seem like a reasonable balance, but then waiting to see how it performs. And I'm wondering how you envision that the ISO will do that, given that there'll be a number of changes that they're making at the same time. You know, obviously, we all hope that the auction net auction payments will go down, the losses, so to speak, will go down. But how will it be possible to attribute the change to any particular action on the ISO side? And does that concern you?
Thanks, Ellen, for the question. So Jim is a genuine social scientist in that he actually collects data and tests hypotheses, and I think we all recognize this is not a randomized controlled trial where we're going to be able to attribute cause and effect, and it's the real world of policy reform is much messier than that. But Jim, I don't know if you have anything to say about.
I'll just say, yeah. I mean, I think I had a similar thought, but more in the earlier rounds of this proposal when there were four changes, some of which were quite consequential, being pushed forward, and so I kind of viewed the revision as, at least in that dimension, as helping to identify the impact of the node pairs as say, distinct from reducing the quantity of RRs being offered. The information release is harder to acknowledge, but I guess we could try, and I think there could be more of this in general, try to tie specific CRR payments and net auction deficiencies to specific constraints. There was a fair amount of that broken down in the earlier reports, but to the extent there are specific constraints that become integrated into the auction model that we could have viewed as not having made it under the old rules, we could maybe isolate the effects of that. But I guess I sort of view the really big change here as being the node pairs, and now that is on its own as opposed to part of a bigger reduction in rights.
Well, okay, thank you for that. But it's on its own, but at the same time, if the ISO improves the relationship between the CRR model and the day-ahead model, then the losses could significantly decrease even without that node pair change. So do you have any comfort that they'll be able to identify how much of the change was due to improved convergence of the models versus elimination of the ability to even bid on them on certain pairs?
Well, I think we will know which constraints make it into the auction annual model that would not have before. And we could then at least isolate the effect of having those constraints included under the rules that we have. I guess you could try to do something more general by coming up with hypothetical bids with those constraints. But at least we will be able to kind of decompose under the combination of rules how the adding the auction model with the node bids, how those constraints being in the model are influenced. But yeah, I mean, we won't know exactly what people would have bid with those constraints if the information was the only change.
Yeah, this is intrinsically going to be difficult to analyze because it's also just the uncertainty of energy prices, and some months there are large profits on CRRs, and other times they're smaller or even losses. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty, and it'll take some time to look for patterns. And it wouldn't be easy. If we started changing one thing at a time and waited a year to estimate the effects, we'd be doing this for the rest of the decade. So that's why we do feel a sense of urgency to correct it, because it seems to be pretty far out of line in terms of the balance between auction revenues and CRR payouts.
Okay. Thanks. I mean, it just seems seems sort of hard to imagine that we would ever go back, you know, that you'd ever find any evidence that would have you go back, even if it was difficult to tie the benefits to the node pair reduction. But sort of along those lines, you know, you mentioned on the call and of course, in your paper that you had some concerns about the specific proposal to reduce source sync pairs and that you'd prefer to have further discussion about this, you know, this definition of which ones are going to be removed, but it seems like you're not reserving your recommendation to move forward for that discussion. So I guess I'm wondering, how does that get vetted before we take this broad brush approach? I mean, there are these other options of just eliminating those, either the electrically equivalent pairs or the zero price pairs, or potentially looking at the set and seeing if some of the ones the ISO has proposed could remain without a lot of risk. But so you've obviously rationalized in your mind that it's okay to move forward even though you have these reservations. Can you say any more about that or what you would like to see happen?
Well, this is Scott. I mean, I think we're going to have to go further, not backwards. So I think this is a first step, and maybe there might be more fundamental changes that will be needed in the evaluation of the auction and the evaluation of CRRs. And maybe after those more, after we make some of those changes, maybe we won't need to make these restrictions, or maybe we'll keep them. So, again, I think we need to make these restrictions and see how they work, but I think there'll probably be more changes, not fewer.
I agree that there'll probably be more changes. I guess I don't know if I am as certain as you are that that these changes are irreversible. So I think hopefully there will be some refinement, and once we know a little bit more about where the biggest shortfalls are coming from and what the sort of interactions are, it's not clear which way we can go, but I would support that all sort of options remain.
Okay. Thanks. I have more questions, but I know we're almost out of time and there's somebody else in the queue, so I appreciate your time.
Marvin, is there anybody else in the queue?
Yes. I'll go ahead and move to the next. Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, good afternoon. It's Mark Coleman with PowerX. I just wanted to, I'll just say a couple of quick comments given the limited time left. I guess the first thing to say is I just wanted to commend the MSC. I thought your paper was comprehensive, it was balanced, and it was thoughtful, and are generally supportive of many of the points that you make in your paper, as hopefully you've seen from our comments. I think this is a first step. I think there are other steps that should be further explored to address the issue. I guess the one area I wanted to focus on was just the open access. I think that the importance of open access on a forward basis, I believe, cannot be overstated. That, you know, we acquire CRRs often from import locations to trading hubs, and at trading hubs we can engage in forward transactions at a location where there are many buyers and many sellers. The SCE proposal, from our perspective, is effectively the elimination of forward access of the CAISO grid, that if all CRRs are allocated, they will largely go to the large LSEs. Large LSEs will be able to stand effectively at importer and generator locations and disrupt the balance of competitive forward wholesale markets by being able to stand there with CRRs that they haven't competed for, that are effectively allocated to them, and negotiate with suppliers from that position. That is anything but a competitive wholesale market. I also would say on open access, I think it's important to note the asymmetry. These same entities that argue that it should be between willing buyers and willing sellers are effectively saying, let's allocate all of the forward transmission to the load serving entities. And then if they want to sell that transmission, and only if they want to sell that transmission at an acceptable price, or someone else is willing to speculate and go short, will someone else be able to receive transmission access to the CAISO grid on a forward basis? I know that these same LSEs also invest in yearly and multi-year transmission rights on third-party transmission systems, often to remove renewable resources to their own grid. They're able to acquire those on a level playing field with the load-serving entities in those third-party territories. They're also able to acquire those at cost-based rates, not at the full market value or auction value of those transmission rights. So not only is the SCE proposal a direct assault on forward open access, but it is entirely asymmetrical to the open access that they enjoy on other transmission provider systems and rely on so that they can engage in efficient forward transactions. So again, I want to be mindful of the time, and I appreciate the opportunity to comment.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. I don't have a response to that, Jim or Scott?
No, I think we're running out of time. Are there any other comments?
We do have one more here in the queue.
Okay. Take that one.
Caller, your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Doug Bochignone with Blend Resource Consultants. I represent Silicon Valley Power in City and County of San Francisco. And I just had a few comments, things that sort of jumped out at me when I read the opinion. Eric Little pointed out the out-of-balancing authority area LSEs can have the right to participate in the allocation process, and I think he's exactly right about that. There was a statement in the opinion about viewing the capacity that doesn't get allocated as essentially unwanted capacity, and I think that's a very misleading characterization. There's some significant restrictions on the allocation process in terms of allowed sinks, to the DLAPs and sublaps that restrict significantly the amount of capacity that's available for the allocation, as well as the amount of load that the allocation participants are able to nominate. They'd like to get more. It's just they're restricted from getting more, and it isn't unwanted capacity by any means. The other point that sort of made me a little bit uncomfortable, there was a discussion about what happens if the SCE proposal would be adopted, that you would expect that without having the CRRs, ISO-backed CRRs, which I think are really load-backed CRRs, that the risk-seeking third parties they'd have to be paid more to offer counterflow CRRs. And I guess my reaction to that is, isn't that exactly what we would want, what we expect? I mean, we're seeing now that the auction CRRs are, on average, being sold for 60 cents on the dollar. And, if we're expecting participants in the auction for hedging purposes, we'd expect them to be willing to pay more than the value. So I would hope we would expect they'd have to pay more. And then just the last point I wanted to make is that this discussion about the market efficiency gains, the part that's been bothering me throughout the discussion in this whole stakeholder process is the parties who are arguing for those gains provided no evidence at all that they participate in those forward markets. But the entities who are the most significant recipients of this auction CRRs haven't demonstrated by any means that they're actually supporting a significant amount of bilateral transactions. We know they're not selling their CRRs in the secondary system because no one ever has. Many of the participants don't even have market-based rate authority, so they're not presumably participating in the physical energy markets. So unless they're doing financial transactions that they haven't been willing to demonstrate they're doing, I just think it's not fair to assume that that they're their participation as having a significant impact. And then just the last point I wanted to make is that the paper pointed to some small load serving entities that get allocation CRRs at the trading hubs, and I cited several of them who haven't signed on to supporting the SCE proposal. I've been authorized by City and County San Francisco to represent that they do support the SCE proposal.
Okay, Doug, thanks for your comments. I'll just quickly say that the lack of evidence of market efficiency gains from definitely certain pairs of sources and sinks, gen to gen and others, is something that we've also noted, but evidence from other markets, which Scott has pointed out, and some also here in California, that the sources and sinks associated with physical transfers of supply to load in eastern markets are much more valued in the auctions near their the congestion payments that or rather the payouts day ahead, the settlements for the FTRs and CRRs, and we think that also that's likely to be true here in California. So we're not entirely unsympathetic to what you say about the lack of evidence, and we think that that's possibly if there was evidence, we learn something in the future about gen-to-gen or other pairs that in this proposal would no longer be allowed, then the ISO could change its mind and the design could be changed, as Jim has suggested.
I'll just say quickly on the unwanted capacity part of the opinion. So we actually say at first glance one might think this and then get into some howevers, so including noting that there are restrictions on what the source sync pairs that can be allocated are. So we weren't necessarily saying that it is. We're saying at first glance you might think this, but there's complications. So and in fact, I think I agree that there are these restrictions in the allocation process that are in some sense worrisome if we got rid of the auction or made it voluntary only, because then there are certain types of, call them load-backed CRRs, that could basically you're left with only counterflow sorts of sales at that point. So that's kind of what I meant by locking in the allocation set of CRRs as being really the backbone of what could then later be transacted. The reconfiguration of that capacity would be, I think, seriously limited, and that's where the restrictions on allocation become really concerning.
Okay, thanks, Jim. So let's see, Scott, you want to add anything?
Yeah, just let me add two quick things. I think that Doug, we didn't mean that when we talked about foreclosing access to the grid, we didn't mean that the price shouldn't go up to cover the expected payout, but we don't think it should be driven up to two or three times that or complete act denial of the access to the grid at any price. So we do have the idea that these reforms will drive prices up more where auction revenue prices are in line with the expected payout. And I think the reason we're supporting the CAISO, you know, changes is that we are discounting the vaguer claims about market efficiency where we don't see any connection. But we are concerned about preserving the ability to enter into forward contracts at trading hubs in particular.
Okay. And indeed, higher prices may be more efficient, but if higher prices within the auction would benefit consumers. Higher prices in a bilateral market where you have third parties taking short positions, that would not benefit consumers and would probably increase the cost of delivered energy. So I think there is a distinction there. At this point, we've gone well over time, so I am going to ask whether anybody would like to call a question and make a motion.
I move to adopt the opinion.
I second the motion.
Okay. Dr. Bushnell has moved and Dr. Harvey has seconded that the opinion be approved. Let me ask whether there are any changes or further discussion.
Not from Scott.
Yeah, no.
And neither from me. So at this point, I'll ask Jim, what's your vote?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
I vote yes as well. And so the opinion on congestion revenue rights auction efficiency is unanimously adopted. And the last item of the agenda, therefore, can be moved to, which is if there's any additional business at this time that Jim or Scott you want to raise?
No.
Okay. The next MSC meeting is scheduled for Thursday. Is that April 4th?
Yeah.
Correct? Is that Thursday?
April 5th.
April 5th, sorry. So and that will be an in-person meeting in Folsom, and there is already a full to overflowing plate in the agenda there, and I'm looking forward to seeing many of you who have been on the line or hearing from you at that time as well. And at this point, operator, we can conclude the call.
Thank you for joining today's teleconference. The call has now concluded, and you may disconnect.